Okay, so this is our overview. And this is the take-home message also. So if you don't get anything else and it's just too, it's the end of the day, and if you can't get through all the stats we're going to go through, this is what you want to come away from. There are increasing number of high-quality studies demonstrating the safety of home birth in low-risk women. Number two, home birth literature is also plagued with studies with poor methodology or inappropriate interpretation. Often it's the second one that's the worst, is they come up with some stuff, but some good data, but very bad interpretation. The third thing is studies with poor methodology often suggest home birth is riskier. And unfortunately, number four, studies with poor methodology often get in high-profile journals, partly because they seem to be driven by the obstetricians that are driving them. And they have accompanying editorials proclaiming home birth a problem and then receive high media attention. So this is essentially what we're talking about, why it is that what happens on the right seems to be a better setting than what happens on the left. So the home birth versus hospital birth. And I just wanted, as a midwife, as a home birth and hospital birth midwife, I'm required in Canada to do both. I just wanted to show, because we often so often don't do this, the equipment we carry. There's a lot of equipment here. We basically carry a hospital in our trunk of our car, and I always tell the obstetricians about that because they often think we only carry candles. Even the women think that. And so this is the resuscitation equipment. This is one of our most important tools. The tub. And this is a Canadian tire pool, which that might be one thing we have to think about in terms of Ken will talk about that at the end. we'd like to show this slide because this is the slide from the study that we had published in the British Medical Journal in 2005. And this was on 5,418 women having births at home. We'd like to show this slide because this is very similar to all the home birth studies that have come out since that are really good studies with good methodology. It shows the drastic difference in intervention rates. Look at the first thing there, the amount of electrofetal monitoring. It's huge, like 10% at home births and almost 90% in hospital births. Look at the amount of IVs given in hospital births. We can do IVs at home, but we don't do them very frequently because they're not needed. Look at the number of times that women have their membranes ruptured in hospital births and how infrequently in the red it is with CPMs. Epidurals, the reason we always put this down is this is planned home births, but they can't always move to hospital.
Oh, I see.
She was just saying, how can you do epidurals at home? We don't. But we're always talking about planned home births. If they move to hospital, they can always have the option of having an episiotomy with a physician there. They can always have electrofetal monitoring if they want to. Episiotomies, you can see it's also lower. C-sections, look at that, 3.7% compared to 19% low-risk women. That's an incredible thing. We use that data quite a bit. All right. So this was the APH resolution passed in 2001. The resolution supports efforts to increase access to out-of-hospital maternity care services and increase the range of quality maternity care choices available to consumers through recognition that legally regulated and nationally certified direct entry midwives can serve clients desiring safe, planned, out-of-hospital maternity care services. This was in 2001 that we haven't actually noticed there has been a big move on it in the U.S., unfortunately. So this is what we think contribute to good quality home birth study. And this is actually with consultation with our researchers. We work a lot with the researchers in Britain. We certainly check in with our Canadian researchers and with the American ones. But this is one of the most important things is to have a large sample size. Number two, to have an appropriate comparison group that you really can compare so you're not comparing apples to oranges. It's good for the study to be prospective, although we'll see with the Dutch study, it hardly matters because as long as you get the entire population, as they did in the Dutch study, then it can be retrospective. It needs to separate planned from unplanned home births, which is a big problem, for instance, with the Pang study that was done in Washington State in 2002. The study should separate low risk from high risk births, and that's one of the incredibly difficult things that people can't seem to get through. These studies keep coming out where they don't do that. And also, we think it's really important to have some comprehensive study across a defined population or a national study, which is why we originally did our study, because we had done several that were in small jurisdictions, but we felt that we needed a national study. And it was just more difficult to get a good comparison group as a result. And then the last thing is interpretation should be consistent with results, which, as we will show, is not always true. So just we want to just say right off the bat why the RCT is not the gold standard. Number one, it's not double-blinded. We always know that because that's really part of the gold standard. The person getting the treatment should not be aware that they're getting the treatment, and the person giving it should not be aware. And that's almost always, well, that's impossible in home births. It's impossible in vaginal versus cesarean births. We know that. It's just, that's why it's very difficult to do an RCT. It's hard to get people to participate in a study like this if you're going to be randomized to a home or a hospital. Just the type of woman who would enter such a trial would be someone who really doesn't care that much, who really doesn't have enough motivation to do it, and one way or the other. And one of the things they found from the study that's quoted down here by Hendricks, this was the Dutch study. It was done in the one country where they do have enough home births to really look at this, and they tried to get people in a randomized control trial. They couldn't carry it off. And the number one reason for why they couldn't carry it off is because women had decided by 12 weeks where they wanted to give birth. So they just couldn't get enough people interested. So I think you're going to take over now.
Hi there. Pleasure to be here. We always would like to show graphs like Eugene gets to show of the change in rate based on when research gets published. But one of the real take-home messages here is in the United States, the rate of planned home births stays at about 1% no matter what happens. And part of the reason I think that's the case is because, as we'll show a little bit later, an awful lot of the bad studies end up getting national press. And you just can never counter those because they get out, they get bad press, people once again find out that home birth is so horrible, and the good studies get very little press. So maybe I'm going to do one of those graphs like Eugene's just to show that there is no difference. Next time. So these are six studies that have happened in the last decade that were of poor quality, but ended up in relatively good journals and generally got a lot of media attention. And I'm just gonna go very briefly through what the problems of each one is. The Pang study is famous in the United States. It was a large study of birth certificates. And as Eugene has pointed out, birth certificates are notoriously not that reliable. And just like Eugene's study, they can't figure out how many women had a trial of labor. In these birth certificate studies, you don't know which women were planning to deliver at home. So you have women in hospital who are planning to deliver at home, approximately 10% who have moved to hospital that get missed, and those are the ones you really want to find out because they're likely to be the more risky ones. And then you have the women who have unplanned home births that have a much higher death rate that they try and pull out, but they don't usually manage to. We have a published letter responding to the Pang study saying, if your study's so good, why is there only a 5% transfer rate during labor from the planned home birth when it's almost all, in all other studies, it's around 10%? And of course, the reason is very likely that a lot of those were unplanned home births that weren't transferred. That study, politically speaking, was probably a response to the Stanford PhD study that was done by Peter Schlenske and finished as a PhD in 1999, where they found in the state of California there was no difference in risk between planned home births and planned low-risk hospital births when a particularly good study was done where they were able to link the hospital admission separation records with the birth certificates, and California had on the birth certificate where the planned place of birth was. The next study is a British independent midwife study. We saw it presented at the ICM conference, International Confederation of Midwives conference in 2006. And at that conference, the fellow was presenting it and we went, oh my God, he's just putting in low risk and high risk women in the same category and then saying home birth is bad. So we talked to him afterwards. We got him to work on the study before he published it, but it still came out. It was pretty adamant to put them all together. And so we end up with a study again that got media attention where the women who had high risk births were at increased risk, but they were particularly a particularly selected group, because there were women who had decided to have a home birth with a midwife in spite of having risk factors and had chosen the home birth generally because they'd had a problem in the hospital before and they refused to go. So they didn't necessarily even follow the midwife's advice. Now, that didn't come out very much in the study, unfortunately. So that one suggesting higher risk. The Lindgren one was also presented to that conference, and it was an inexperienced midwife who presented it, and she found higher risk with the 900 home births she had compared to the hospital births, 11,000 hospital births she compared them to. But she had not bothered to take out the birth with the congenital malformation in her that had died in her study, which doubled the perinatal mortality, because in 900 births there were two deaths instead of one. If it had only been one, there would be no difference. She went, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. We said, we can't believe it either. Is it out yet? No, it's still with the editors. We said, well, tell the editors you want to withdraw the study or change the results because it's not appropriate the way you have it. When she contacted the editors, they were unwilling to change what was being presented, which again is political. They wanted to have a higher risk come out. The Australian home birth study just came out this year. We have a published letter about that one that was published in the Australian Medical Journal. In that one, they again blended the low-risk women with the high-risk women and found higher risk. And again, the number of the women who ended up having deaths were women who did not take the advice of the midwives at home because they'd had bad experiences in the hospital and they just refused to go. Now, is that a problem with low-risk home birth or is that a problem with hospital birth? We think it's the latter. We have we had a letter published on that. That study parallels an earlier Australian home birth study where, again, they analyzed the data and found a higher risk at home than in low-risk hospital births, but again, they had not separated out the low-risk births. In a follow-up publication, they split the low and high-risk births and came to the conclusion that the low-risk births had no increase in risk. Finally, there's the EVER study. I don't know if we all have time to really get into that one today, but that one is the one that came out last week. In that one, they call it a cohort study. It gets published in the British Medical Journal. It actually is a case series where they just took all the deaths and did a confidential, basically equivalent of a confidential inquiry in each one. And they projected what populations were actually exposed based on the postal codes in Utrecht. Well, there's a reason why people spend a lot of money doing cohort studies or proper case control studies, so you make sure you have the right denominators and the right populations so the risks you see are appropriate. And on this one, it just isn't the case. There's already a letter from the midwives in the Netherlands complaining about that, but it's already gotten national media attention and is problematic.
And you know what's really interesting for us about that one is
it's really similar to when the Kapang study came out. Pang study came out just following the tails of Schlenska's study in California, and in a really similar way, this just after this great Dutch study comes out, there's this other study that comes out, and it got published in the British Medical Journal, as I said at the beginning. And they had turned down two studies, the BMJ had turned down two studies. They turned down the larger, the study right across Holland, which was a good retrospective study, and they had turned down the BC study. And after they turned down those two studies, they pick up the independent midwife study from Britain, which was a very bad study, and they picked up this new Utrecht study. There's some huge bias in this publication.
Sorry, the other piece I should have mentioned about this independent midwife study is they didn't have a proper comparison group from England, which were the independent midwives are across England, and so they used a comparison group from Scotland. And what they actually found was that there was higher rates for low-risk women being put into the NICU with the low-risk births and also a much higher level of prematurity. But of course, what ended up in the media was not the higher prematurity among hospital births, but the higher risk among home births. We sort of already talked about, I think we don't have a lot of time, so we'll talk more about that. We wrote a letter to the newspaper and suggested that perhaps the elephant in the room was not the slightly higher risk in home births restricted to low-risk women, but the higher prematurity and higher neonatal intensive care unit admissions, which would have huge implications both for health and cost, which of course they just mentioned in passing. Now we'll turn to the good studies, so it's not just all bad news. The takeaway message here is we have six high, what I would consider high quality, good quality studies of home births, all of them but ours being prospective or cohort, quality cohort studies. We tried to do a cohort study but couldn't find a proper comparison group, so our comparisons are to the United States in general. But the other studies are all proper cohort studies where you take all of the women in one group, in the low-risk hospital birth group, take all the women planning a home birth, you follow them through to the outcomes, and then you compare them statistically very carefully, knowing everything you need to know, pretty well everything you need to know about them. You've got the Schlenska cohort study we talked about briefly. It's 3,500 planned home births. The Janssen home birth study is another, is about 3,500 home births. Ours was 5,500 home births. The older Janssen study was maybe 2,000 home births. The newer one was 3,500 home births compared to both hospital births with midwives and hospital births with obstetricians. The home birth study by Hutton is comparing midwives in hospital with midwives at home and is several thousand. And the DeJong study is half a million births attended by midwives. I think we've got stats for that. There's the Schlenska one. There's the front page of the article for the British Columbia one. This is the Eileen Hutton one in Ontario. Here's the Netherlands one. Again, 530,000 low-risk planned home and hospital births, 300,000 of them at home, intended home births. No difference in risk is the conclusion. Thank you. Okay, in the Dutch study, no significant differences were found between planned home and planned hospital birth, interpartum death, neonatal death during the first 24 hours, interpartum death, neonatal death up to 7 days admissions. Now, both the, as Betty Ann mentioned, both the Dutch study and the BC study tried to get published in the BMJ and were turned down. So, one other piece. We had a little more time for it. We don't. Then a meta-analysis, after all those studies, a meta-analysis comes out this July out of ACOG, where they conclude that although the perinatal mortality, mortality up to 7 days, stillbirth up to 7 days, is no different between home and hospital births, the neonatal mortality, i.e. up to 30 days, is more than doubled in home births. And of course, that gets international media attention. Tripling of neonatal mortality. Now, why is that? We have a letter we published in the British Medical Journal about that, about how misleading that was. We were going to read it, but don't have time. The bottom line is, in looking at neonatal mortality can be defined as up to 7 days or up to 28 days. They chose to look at 28 days, and in the process, excluded the Dutch study, which is about over 90% of the home birth data available. How convenient. And what happened instead, because they threw out the Dutch study, the next largest study, they had basically no quality criteria, the next largest study was the PANG study, our least favorite study of all, became the largest study and what drove the risk estimates of a 90% increase.
Yeah, and the other thing about this that you may not know, quit, okay.
I guess, and they're not going to know because you don't have time to tell them, do you?
You could be asked questions.
The take-home messages were the same as we said originally. There's a large number of high-quality home birth studies. There's a number of not very good studies or poorly interpreted studies. Studies with poor methodology tend to show higher risk, and the poor methodology studies often are the ones that get the large media attention, which is a huge problem we don't know how to solve.
Thank you.
Oh, I need to do a disclosure we didn't do at the beginning. We have nothing to disclose. However, I do want to point out that last year, the National Splash Pool Association of North America approached us and was going to offer us $25 to help push their products for home birth, but we are lucky that we turned it down. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.